Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om narayanam namaskritam naram cheva narottamam devim sarasatim vyasam tato jayo dhiriyat.
Number 29, 7th canto, 3rd chapter.
Tam ishise jagatash tashtu shascha. Pranena mukena pati prajanam. Chitasya chite mana indriyanam. Patir mahan bhuta ganashaya shaham.
Translation. Please repeat. Your Lordship, being the origin of the life of this material world, is the master and controller of the living entities, both moving and stationary, and you inspire their consciousness. You maintain the mind and the acting and knowledge acquiring senses, and therefore you are the great controller of all the material elements and their qualities. And you are the controller of all desires. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this verse it is clearly indicated that the original source of everything is life. Brahma was instructed by the supreme life, Krishna. Krishna is the supreme living entity, nitya nityanam chaitanas chaitanam. And Brahma is also a living entity, but the original source of Brahma is Krishna. Therefore, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 7:7, Mata parataram nanyat kin chirashti jananjaya. O Arjuna, there is no truth superior to me. Krishna is the original source of Brahma, who is the original source of this universe. Brahma is a representative of Krishna, and therefore all the qualities and activities of Krishna are also present in Lord Brahma. Hiranyakashipu is describing Lord Brahma virtually as the Supreme Lord here. And in the next verse, he goes so far as to say, being the supreme soul, the super soul of all living entities, you are beginningless, endless, and omniscient, beyond the limits of time and space. So he'll find out shortly, after he asks for the benediction of immortality, that Lord Brahma is not the ultimate supreme living being. And in fact, a good case could be made that within this universe, and between Lord Brahma and Lord Krishna, there's another also personality who is superior to Lord Brahma. Who would that be? Lord Shiva is not exactly within the universe. I'm not sure this person is exactly within the universe too. But of course, obviously that's true. Another one. Huh? Little down a little bit. This personality has actually also been called omniscient and the super soul of all living beings. Although he's, as far as I know, a jiva soul. Hint, he's one of the Mahajans. Yamaraj. Isn't this world actually called Mritu Loka? So that means that basically Mritu rules. Death rules. You know, in America, they the fans of a rock star, they'll say, rules, you know. But actually, the rock star has to die. So really, you might as well say, death rules. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, mitu sarva haras chaham. I am death. So when Lord, when Hiranyakashipu asked Lord Brahma for immortality, Brahma has to admit that even within the material world, there's another one that controls him, at least controls his duration of life. Because Lord Brahma says, even I have to die. Abrahma bhuvanaloka punaravati narjana homopinti tukantya punarjana navijate. From the highest planet, which is Brahma Loka, down to the lowest planet, they're all places of repeated birth and death. From the highest planet is called Brahma Loka, lowest planet, whatever, Patala Loka, but they're all actually Mritu Loka. Well, Yamaraj is quite powerful. there are these two living entities who basically know everything that's going on within this universe. Yamaraj has to know everything, doesn't he? Otherwise, how will you get what's coming to you? Amazing computations. Have you ever thought about that? How every living being gets their karma? That's administered by Yamaraj. Karmana daiva netsvenam. Ahani ahani bhutani gachantiyam yamalayam. All the living beings, they're rushing every second. I don't know, probably more than, I was going to say millions. That's probably underestimating. Billions of living entities every second are rushing to the abode of Yamaraj. And every one of them is administered their karma according to the rules of material nature. So in order to do this, Yamaraj has to be pretty much all-knowing within the universe. And of course, as the creator, Lord Brahma knows pretty much everything. Just as the architect of a building knows, you know, the things you can't see, the plumbing, the pipes, the architect knows all that. The things that are not immediately visible, he knows all those things. But just as you and I are the knowers of our bodies, but we're not the knowers of other bodies. Therefore, we can't claim to be the Supreme Lord. We can be Atmas, but not Paramatmas. So in the same way, you could say Brahma and Yamaraj, they're the knowers of this Vishrupa, this body, this universe. But they're not Sarvagya. They're not the knowers of everything. Nitya Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam. There's one singular eternal, Nitya, and there are many plural eternals. There's one singular, Chaitana Chaitananam, cognizant living being, and there are Chaitanas Chaitananam, there are plural cognizant living beings. All living beings have some degree of cognizance, up to Lord Brahma, up to Yamaraj. The amount of cognizance they have compared to ours is stupefying. Stupefying. And yet, their cognizance is insignificant compared to that cognizant of the Supreme Lord. Ekaleshwara Krishna, Ara Sabhabrita. There's one Lord. Here Lord Brahma is described as Isha. That's fair. We're all Ishas, aren't we? The mother's the Isha of the children. The father's the Isha of the mother. The boss at work is the Isha of the father. His supervisor is his Isha. The regional director is his Isha. The continental director is his Isha. The CEO is his Isha. You see? And then so on and so on and so forth. But the Ishvara Parama Krishna. When you get to that Ishvara who has no other Ishvara, then that is Paramishvara. So it's okay. Lord Brahma is Isha. That's fine. But he's not Paramishvara because even he has to die through the agency of Yamaraj. But it's interesting, in America, of recent years, there has been a huge influx of South Indians because of the computer industry. I've been working with Life Membership for 30 years in America. And previously, most Indians in America were from North, Gujaratis, Punjabis. I remember about 10 years ago, the mayor of Los Angeles came to the Indian Independence Day celebrations in the middle of August in Los Angeles. His name was Tom Bradley. And he said at that time, he said, when I'm with this crowd, there are two things I never have to worry about. Medical help and a place to stay. Because they were either doctors or motel owners. I don't know if the term has reached India, but Patel Motel. Ever heard of that? Actually, the Patels own 93% of all the motels in America now. And then a strange thing started happening as you were receiving guests and visitors to the temple. And North Indians are, you know, they're relaxed. They come to the temple, take darshan. As long as you're friendly and hospitable, you don't have to do any, there's nothing special you have to do to receive them. They're quite happy with just a smile of face, acknowledgement, some cordiality. But a strange phenomenon started happening about 6 years ago. A lot of South Indians started arriving. And at first they were from Bangalore. You know, used to assume you're from Gujarat. Yes. Okay. Then after a while you're from Gujarat. No, Bangalore. So then you're from Bangalore. So that was a pretty good guess. And then it shifted. Then after about two years ago, you could pretty much guess you're from Chennai. Everyone who was coming from Chennai. Now it's Hyderabad. I don't know where it's going to be next. But the South Indians are a little more particular. You know, if there isn't a priest, you know, with nice tilak, dhoti, and actually kurta is optional. They actually like it more if you just don't have a court to have a chadar. And they expect certain things, which if you do not administer them, they think the less of you. They think, yeah, these guys are Westerners, and that's what can you expect? You know, what can you expect? You know. The one thing you need to do is you need to go up there and give them Charanamrita. And when you do it, you say, you know this mantra, Akalam Ritu Haranam Savavana Sanvasanam Vishnu Parodikatpuno Sirasir Tariyamiyaham. Akalam Ritu Haranam. Haranam means to kill. Ritu means Yamaraj, or death. Death is killing everyone. Sarvavihari Vanasanam. Vanasa means destruction. Death kills everyone and destroys everything. Nice words to greet someone coming to the temple with, huh? Real optimistic tone to set there. Vishnu pididikam pitva sirisya dharyamiham. However, the lotus feet of Vishnu, which uphold everything, which maintain everything, while death is chasing everyone and everyone's running in fear of death, death himself is in fear of Vishnu. Death gives way. That all-powerful, all-consuming, devouring Lord of this material world, he gives way. In the presence of Vishnu. So take this Charanrita and become immortal. Defeat death by worshipping the Lord of Death, Yamaraj. When Dhruva Maharaj was scheduled to go back on the Vaikuntha Express and a plane landed to pick him up, in America now they have these big tunnels and you just always walk. But still in India, I was glad to see you still have the stairways that they wheel out and you actually disembark on a portable stairway or you embark. So who served as Dhruva Maharaj's stairway when he mounted the airplane? That was none other than Yamaraj. He actually got down and Dhruva was able to step on his and get up onto the plane for going back to Godhead. So that's one thing you do is give Charanamrita. And the other thing you do is benedict with the Shat Hari. The Shat Hari. Make tikka available. They want to do the tikka. And then the Shat Hari. And I'm sure you're all well aware of the configuration. We have a very nice one in Utah. Very beautiful silver one. And the lotus feet are quite large and they have all the auspicious marks of Krishna on them. It's a beautiful, beautiful Shat Hari. And when you do that, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Param Sarapasanti Suryo Deviva Chaksur Aditam Yadvi Pashpo Vifanyavo Jagavamsam Samindite Vishnu Paramam Param. That crown represents all the opulence that you can attain in this material world. Up to the level of Lord Brahma. It's a very opulent crown. It's also got all kinds of decorations and everything. It's made of silver. So the benediction is that no matter how opulent you become, how enriched you become in this material world, even up to the level of Lord Brahma, no matter how many living entities you have under your control, whether you're Yamaraj or Lord Brahma himself, You should always be blessed with the remembrance, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam. That however big you are in the material world, The lowest thing in the spiritual world is higher than you. Krishna's feet are always higher than the highest thing. I went south from Bombay. I got to India about 3 weeks ago, and I took a train down to Panaji. And the day train, it gets packed on the lower berths. And then there's an upper part that says for baggage only. But everyone likes to sit there. So there were a bunch of rowdy high school kids. And we were like six on the lower wooden bench. And then there were six high school kids up top. And at first they were just putting their feet across. And then they got tired of that. And then their feet came down. So I'm sitting there with a delightful, charming vision and odor of, you know, six pairs of feet there. It was absolutely wonderful, you know. It's just great, you know. And I felt mildly insulted, as most people probably would, to have the feet right above you, you know, right almost on your head. But at Kurukshetra, who was it? Wasn't it Dronacharya? The Drisadumna kicked him or something? Huh? No, someone insulted. I believe it was Dronacharya by kicking him. There are so many rules of chivalry. Don't fight an enemy that's running away. Don't fight an enemy that's not prepared, and so on and so forth. So many rules for giving respect. And the unthinkable on battlefield is a fallen enemy to touch him with your foot. It's unthinkable. So that which in the material sense is the worst insult, in the spiritual sense, it's the greatest benediction. But you're blessed. The priest blesses you. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Param. May you always go through life with the lotus feet of Vishnu above you. May you always be conscious that though you may be Lord Brahma, may you always be conscious of the supreme position of Krishna. Just as we're always conscious of the sun above us in the sky. Is there anyone that doubts that? If I say the sun is above you, is there anyone that disputes that? Is there anyone that's not in some level or another aware of that all the time? Prabhupada used to say, okay, we can't see the sun, but because there's light, we know the sun is there. We just know it's there, up there. And we're conscious of it at every minute of every day. So let us similarly aspire every minute of every day to be conscious of the supreme position of Krishna. Let us aspire for that consciousness. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Param Sarabhasanti Suryo Devi Vichaksaratanam. So we take care of the South Indians that way. They're satisfied. Okay, these guys aren't so bad after all. They had a big controversy down in Udupi. You heard about that? This Vishvesha, his name is Vishvesha Tirtha. Great scholar, and he's been to America preaching and spreading the gospel. He's in our line. You know, we're descended from Madhvacharya and Lord Brahma. So how many trips has he made to America? Two or three trips. Most people, you know, and he goes for preaching. Goes for preaching, not for sense gratification. I have a friend, Gujarati friend in Los Angeles. He didn't come from India, but he came from Kenya. So when his relatives come from overseas, they come from India. He has relatives in India also. They come and he asks, what do you want to do? Where do you want to go? Oh, Las Vegas, Universal Studios, you know. And then we want to gamble and we want to drink. And Cheeman says, okay, I'll take you there, but I'm going to pass on the gambling and the drinking. You came to America? You came all the way from Africa? And others came all the way from India? And you don't gamble and drink? Why did you go? What was the point? They actually found Krishna in America, thanks to his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Without him, that's what they would have found in America. Except for Prabhupada. the thin saffron line. In America, they have this term for the policeman. There's natural anarchy. There's natural lawlessness. There's natural violence between people. And the only thing that stands between orderly, peaceful society and chaos is the thin blue line that all the policemen in America wear blue. So that's the thin blue line, you see. So the thin saffron line is you, all the emissaries of Srila Prabhupada. But not everyone goes to America for those reasons. Just, you know, 999,999 out of a million. He went for preaching just like Prabhupada went for preaching. So they opposed him. They said, you have not a right to touch the deity because you've been to the West, and it's considered that anyone who goes to the West is contaminated immediately. Contaminated immediately. And when he was installed on 17th of January, there's 8 mosques. The members of the other 7 mosques didn't go. They boycotted it. You see, but to his credit, he went ahead and did it. And he said, after my 2 years are over, then I'll go back and preach again. I'll go back and preach again. It's good. Spunk. Yeah. Time I was in Los Angeles, and some sannyasis from Swami Narayan came to L.A. So they actually invited me to Swami Narayan Temple to give a youth seminar on vegetarianism. And they were very nice. They sat there and listened to the whole thing. 45-minute presentation on why this second-generation Indian should be vegetarian. So then we got to talk, and I said, how long are you in America for? They said, 6 weeks. They said, we're not allowed to stay longer than 6 weeks. Then we have to go back. I said, why is that? Because more than 6 weeks, we'll get contaminated. And always two. Never alone. Never alone. Always two. So, after we give the benedictions and so on and so forth, and we go outside, I never cease to be amazed. This is absolutely, I just like, the Indian people, they have these vehicles, right? They walk outside, and it's parked to maybe as far away as Prabhupada is, and they have something that unlocks the doors, starts the engine, starts the heater, starts the radio, just pop, like that. Probably in the future it'll wash itself, you know, clean itself, change its own tires. I don't know. Just pop, by remote control. So it is said that Krishna is a remote controller. Lord Brahma is the immediate controller. Krishna is the remote controller. And you mentioned Lord Shiva. He doesn't have to do anything. Actually, Lord Brahma is the one that goes pop. And the signal is Lord Shiva. Isn't it that Krishna glances over material creation? That's all he just... That's it. That glance, that's all Krishna does. Just glances. Or even Vishnu. Krishna doesn't even do it. Vishnu does it. And then that glance is Lord Shiva, Sambhu. The glance. Okay, you take it from here. And then the glance impregnates everything. That's Lord Shiva. And the lingam is matter, which is unorganized, inert, flat. That's the first spark of life. It begins to have contours. The first contour, you see, when Lord Shiva animates life. You see what I mean? Otherwise, it has no real contours or anything like that. But that glance, that is Lord Shiva. So Vishnu doesn't really do anything more than that. He controls and maintains and enters into all the atoms and so on and so forth. But you just see how Krishna has no need of being involved. He has no need of being involved. Prabhupada told the story of a European who went to India, visited various temples. You know the story? He came back to America, or Britain. He said to his friends, he said, I didn't make any big studies or anything. I didn't research. I didn't spend hours in the library. But I found out very easily who God is after visiting India. And the friend said, how did you do that? Well, I went to the Brahma temple, maybe Pushkar or something. Brahma's busy creating. Shiva, he's very powerfully holding back the forces of destruction and then releases it at the time of annihilation. So he's also the sun temple. You have the fantastic structure in Konark. Yakchaksuresa Savita Raja Samaste Suraha Shesha Murtir Tejaha. Sun is rising, mounting his chariot every day at exactly the right time. And it's not the same time. It's not an automatic endeavor. It's not unthinking. Because it's slightly different every day of the year. So the sun has to be sharp. It has to be sharp. He has to be right on time. And he drives his chariot. And you can predict 10, 20, 15 years from now exactly what moment the sun's going to rise. And he's got to do it. He's got to do it. He's Raja Samastre Suraha. He's the king of all the gods and all the planets. Without the sun, nothing would exist, even for a moment. Everything would be finished within an hour. And yet, by whose order is he so punctual? Who is he afraid of? Who's he following? This way, the European went to all these temples and he saw that every one of the Isharas, of the controllers, appeared to be working out of fear of someone greater than they were. Then he came to the Krishna temple and he saw Shamasundaram, Tribhanga, Lalitam smiling. Krishna doesn't appear to have any of the worries of creation, disillusion, maintenance on his mind, is he? There's not even a little furrow, see? Like that. So, you know. And he's not even glancing. That's Vishnu. He just, gopis, you know. Yeah. Krishna was holding up Govardhan Hill like that. And he was glancing at the gopis like that, out of love and affection and attraction. Yeah. Krishna isn't even obliged to glance for the creation of this material world. Yam Chaima Sundar Tribhanga Lalitam. But he had nothing to do. He was not obliged to do anything. He had nothing to do. It siriori me loke nakuryam karanchedaham sankarasitarekta upahanyam imapicha. Krishna says, I have nothing to do within this material creation. We talked the other day about the qualities of a powerful person, isn't it? A powerful person has people to drive his vehicles, fly his plane, do his laundries, make his phone calls for him. He doesn't have to do those things. Prabhupada said, well, I don't know if these are exactly Prabhupada's words, but this was the point. You have a big corporation like Reliance. In America, we say General Motors. Now, you say Reliance. So you have so many people maintaining the structure, the behemoth. Workmen, people in the resource, supply and demand department, and marketing, accounting. You have sales, you have secretaries, and you have the board. But the head, the CEO, he could be on the golf course, playing golf, enjoying himself. Because he's not obliged to do. Everyone else is obliged, but he's not obliged in that way. And for Krishna, not only does he have all the demigods to do all the work of creation and maintenance of the universe, but he's got someone to be God. Krishna is so powerful, he doesn't have to be God. He's got Vishnu for that. He said, you go be God. Now, tell me or not whether this is Ishwara Parama, Krishna. See? You go be God. You know what I'm saying? And thus he reserves himself for really the most important thing. Because the most important thing is not this material. This material world is populated by souls in rebellion. And it is a secondary priority. It's a secondary priority. Just like the prison house, you appoint a very good man. You appoint a very good man and a very good staff to supervise the prison house. The warden should be a very good, honest man, good citizen, and so on and so forth. You appoint him the thankful task of overseeing, and then he gets a good staff, and hopefully everything runs nicely. But it's not a priority, is it? Prabhupada said that the whole material world, headed up by Lord Vishnu, it's like a traveling fair. Goes somewhere to an empty field, sets it up, the shamayans, the kanat, the food, the sitting, everything, sets it up, the merchants come, their booths and all, like the flea market. The flea market. That's what it's like. Saturday flea market. Set it up, do your business, which is commercial, no real love, lust. You see, no love, no prema, only kama. All the people who are interested in this, they come together, they do their business, and then it's dismantled. Till next time. Sahasra Yuga Paryanta Mahayad Brahmano Vidu Ratram Yuga Sahasram Teho Ratta Vidarjana. Lord Brahma's one day is 1,000 yugas, Chatur Yugas. 4,300,000 times, that's Lord Brahma's one day. And then his night is times 2, his week is times 7, his month is times 4, his year is times 12, and he lives 100 years. And there are partial annihilations and so on and so forth. But the whole thing is only a temporary show only. It's only a temporary show only. And why should Krishna be involved? Vishnu can take care of that. Vishnu, you be God for the criminals. You be the warden. You be the judge. See what I'm saying? And be the judge. So, the European noted that that personality who obliges everyone else to do the work and himself is not obliged to do the work, that is Krishna. And who do you know amongst the residents of Vrindavan that regards Krishna as God? Mother Yashoda, that when she looked in Krishna's mouth, after being accused of eating dirt, she looked in his mouth and saw all the 14 planetary systems, up from lower planets up to Brahma Loka, saw Lord Brahma, Indra, saw herself looking in the mouth of Krishna. And then she said, okay, don't eat dirt again. Don't eat dirt again. So we aspire to follow in the footsteps of these great devotees who are in yoga maya, who have been blessed and benedicted to have a personal relationship with Krishna. We are the dasana, 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 servant of the 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 servant. And that's what we want. We want to be in the mood of Mother Yashoda. We want to be in the mood of Nanda Maharaj. Krishna is the greatest. He's the greatest. Millions of Vishnus are coming from Krishna. But how great is Mother Yashoda that Krishna hankers after the milk from her breast? Krishna can't live without it. Mother Yashoda's breast milk. And how great is Nanda Baba that Krishna takes his shoes? The greatest benediction for us is to always think of Krishna's feet on our head above us. So what is the position of Nanda Maharaj? That because of his devotion to Krishna, his love for baby Krishna, his attachment to Krishna, that Krishna takes Nanda Baba's shoes on his little head and brings them to him. So that's what we aspire for. We aspire to be Raganugas, Raganuga Bhaktas. To follow in the footsteps of the footsteps of the footsteps of the footsteps of those who are serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead in love and devotion. The real Supreme Personality of God. So any questions or comments? If you ask me about the knowledge acquiring senses and the working senses, you're going to be disappointed. So I'll just tell you that right now. This was not an analytical talk. Any questions or comments? Yes?
Hare Krishna. I would like to know that what is the secret of maintaining a spiritual life so steady for a number of years in your Krishna consciousness? What is the most important thing that you kept
that
in your
the
mind?
Alternative is unthinkable. Of course, there's so much nectar. Pratyaksa pagamam dharmam susukum kartamavyayam. This is not a blind religious faith where you believe, and maybe at the time of death something nice will happen. It's pratyaksam. You can experience it. If you chant Krishna's name with concentration, you'll feel nectar. Because Krishna's name is Purnam. He's non-different in his name. That festival on Saturday night, those people came from L.A. Raghunath had his yoga group. They landed in India, and this is their first day in India. And then we talked to them in the garden afterwards. Yeah, it was the best day of their lives. The best day of their lives. They practically said as much. Who could forget something like that? What the high points that we have routinely. You know, these people, that was the best day of their lives. They're in their 35, 40 years old. That was the best day of their life. This happens to us regularly. It's routine for us. For them, it was absolutely extraordinary, life-altering. For us, it's, just another ecstatic festival. And we're going to have another one tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? We had the Guru Puja, and everyone's dancing and stuff like that. What if I don't feel like dancing? So what? So what? So what? The flowers are here. The aromas are here. Krishna's here. Prabhupada's here. The devotees are here. So what if you don't feel like that? You're still happy. How can you not be happy? There's happiness all around you. You can't not be happy. It's all happiness. You can't be not happy. We did a commercial in Australia one year. Remember, I don't know if they came to India, but this is the greatest commercial for this very reason. There were these denim shirts, Rawlings shirts. They were denim shirts. I don't think they have them anymore. They were a denim shirt with sort of mother-of-pearl buttons, snap buttons, and a nice collar. You remember those? Are they still around? I haven't seen them for ages. They were calling them Rollins shirts or something like that. Okay. So the company that sold them in Australia came to us and said, look, we'll pay you $1,100 if you'll get the temple downtown Melbourne like at 5 o'clock in the morning when there's no traffic, and we get to take a picture of you guys. $1,100 was a lot of money in those days. It was like 1973. So what do we have to do? Just do what you do, have a kirtan, chant, jump up in the air and everything. Except for one person. One devotee had a dhoti. Jonathan. We picked Jonathan because he's kind of like. One devotee had a dhoti on, and we put one of these shirts on him on top of his dhoti. So he's it was about 30 devotees. Madhavisa, he leads great kirtans, and it's downtown Melbourne as the sun's rising, and they blocked. There wasn't any traffic. Sun's rising, so. Kirtan gets going and the devotee's just going up in there. But Jonathan Skater was instructed to earn the $1,100 for the temple. He couldn't smile. He couldn't jump in there. He just had to go like this. And the resultant poster was in all the buses. It was one of those long posters, because there were so many devotees. All the devotees up in the air, and the one guy in his shirt, and the caption was, I won't go anywhere without my Rawlings shirt. Hare Krishna. And it was hugely successful. They sold, we should have asked for a lot more than $1,100. Because it was impossible. It was an impossible thing. It was an impossible thing. What to speak of a shirt? I mean, for any reason, you know. Even if you lost your near and dear relative, you still couldn't not be happy in the midst of the kirtan. So the very impossibility of it was what tickled people and made it such a successful, you know, that you retain the image in it like that. So there's so much ecstasy. I mean, how? But other than that, you know, if you're feeling down, what keeps you in Krishna consciousness is the alternate is unthinkable. To be out there without Krishna consciousness, without devotees, I don't care how tough it is here, you're not gonna find me there. You're not gonna find me out there. And I know what life was like before I became a devotee. I don't want that. That's never gonna happen again. So Prabhupada said, when it's tough, and I know you're all living together in crowded conditions and so on and so forth, you know, and it seems wonderful. I mean, I look through the grated window and I always see a big smiling face, you know. But even assuming that some people are get on your nerves a little bit, you know, Prabhupada said, I don't know, it doesn't happen here, but it happens other places, you know. Prabhupada said, if the thought comes, okay, I'm going to move out. And then you think, what is that going to be like? What is that actually going to be like? And then you immediately discard the thought. Jai Prabhu, I don't really mind. Go right ahead. So that's what keeps you in Krishna consciousness, because the alternative is absolutely unthinkable. Any other questions? Is that right?
The precautions we have to take to see to it that we maintain this step of a consciousness.
The precautions? In Allahabad, during the Kumbh Mela, when it's time to go to the river and take a bath, you don't have to walk. Just be in the crowd. They'll take you there. So just stay right where you are. Just snuggle up. Devotees, just move in a little closer. Move in a little closer here. Just do it, just for demonstrative purposes. Just, there you go. Just snuggle up there. See what I'm saying? No, this is bona fide. It says the perfection of the ears is to hear the kirtan by the devotees. The perfection of the eyes is to see the devotees. And the perfection of the touch is to touch the devotees. So just touch them. Touch them. Yeah, there you go. That's all you have to do. You never have to worry. You just stay right where you are. Any other questions or comments? Anything else? Mm-hmm.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Can you please share with us some of your realizations while following in the footsteps of the residents of Raja? What does it really mean? What have you really realized, please?
Well, when Prabhupada came, he wanted Krishna consciousness spread all over the world. And so he didn't encourage householders. He didn't encourage. That wasn't the time for a congregation. Now is the time for a congregation. But Prabhupada wanted brahmacharis, sannyasis. Nowadays, if you want to be a sannyasi, whoa. It's a long time, huh? Long time. And you have to be really, really good. In those days, you could be a sannyasi within 6 months of joining the movement. Sannyasi, GBC. Because that was what was needed, you know. When they hit the beaches at Omaha in World War II, it wasn't a time for niceties. Oh, excuse me, did I step on your toe? Like, pardon me, you know. You hit the beach hard and fast and dirty. And so Prabhupada wanted a beachhead in the Western countries of Krishna consciousness. So he had very little tolerance for getting on with your life. I mean, he also preached, like someone came to Prabhupada and said, I'm in university. He said, stay. But basically, if you were free to get involved, he wanted you fully involved. at least in the beginning. Just like Christ. When He came, He saw some people, they were fishing. Some fishermen. And they had their nets out and they had a big catch. So He said, come, I'll make you fishers of men. They said, well, we've got, can we pull in the net anyway? We took all the trouble that we've been out here all night long with the nets. Can we pull in the net? He said, no. Come, I'll make you fishers of men. Someone said, well, I got a funeral. Can I just go to the funeral and come back in half an hour? He said, let the dead bury the dead. He wanted everyone fully engaged like that. So when Prabhupada came and started this movement, everybody wanted to preach and open centers. And it happened. You know, there were centers opening all over the place. We were in a mood of transcendental competition. Everybody wanted to outdo everyone else. More books, more centers, so on and so forth. It was very intense. It was very intense. And one devotee asked Prabhupada, is it all right to be in a mood of competition? Is it all right to be in a competitive mood? Because in the material world, it's fierce. It's fierce. Disraeli and Gladstone were prime ministers alternately of England. And they were brilliant politicians, but they hated each other. They were competitive and they hated each other. So I forget which one it was. I think it was Disraeli was giving a speech. And the news came to him that Gladstone had died. So he started glorifying Gladstone and saying he was a great politician, great, great patriot, and so on and so on. He said, I say all these things on the condition that he really is dead. If I find out that this is a trick and he's alive, I take it all back. So someone asked Prabhupada, is it right to be in a mode of competition? And Prabhupada said, spiritual competition, material competition is different. In spiritual competition, if someone does something wonderful, you don't think the less of them. You don't envy them. You appreciate, oh, he's done something wonderful. You still think, let me do something greater. Let me do something greater. But what he or she has done is wonderful. There's no envy. That's the difference. Even Prabhupada said, Lord Chaitanya spread Krishna consciousness, so many centers, so many devotees. Bhaktisiddhanta did more. He said, I have done more, you do more. I was telling the Brahmacharis yesterday that when in 1977, in March, in Mayapur, it's 1977, March. April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November. Prabhupada was only going to be with us for another 8 months. And he was ill then. So he looked out at all the devotees. And he said, I am old, I may go at any time. But you, each one of you, have at least 50 years of preaching ahead of you. And he started to cry. He was envious in a transcendental way. He was envious in a transcendental way. And at that time, we said Prabhupada opened 108 centers. Now there's 400 centers. And I'm looking at you, and I'm thinking each one of you have 50 years ahead of you. So we want, by the time you get to be my age, we want 1,800 centers all over the world. Why 1,800? I think... things get exponential. 18,000 centers. So that was my experience. Not perhaps totally in the mode of goodness, but intense and memorable and never to be forgotten. Does that answer your question in any way, shape? I mean, you asked for subjective answers, so that was a subjective answer. So. It's time. I think it's time. Unless there's one more question which would only be, I could give a quick answer to, we should probably finish. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.